from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
And if you're wondering about the song, Peanut Butter Jelly and a Baseball Bat, is it?
I don't know what it is. It's Chipman and the Buckwheat Boys. So those crazy Buckwheat
Boys. Buckwheat.
Yeah.
And the reason we played the song is actually a reason, and it's, I don't know if you've any of you have seen the circulating on the web, the video. It's like a 2-minute video about how peanut butter disproves evolution. That's a claim, folks.
This is something that I saw a couple months back, and I thought it was so absurd.
I didn't even understand when you told me. Like, I don't think it registered.
It's just so ridiculous. The main thing that I love about this video is, first off, the first 10 seconds you already get a feel for the amazing amount of bias in it. We're going to play it for you right now, and you can hear for yourself just how outlandish these claims are.
All right, let's give it a shot.
I would say this. Any theory on the origin of life on the Earth, or any other planet as far as that's concerned, is a fairy tale.
A fairy tale, pure and simple. Life from non-life, apart from God's direct intervention, is a fairy tale. But despite that obvious truth, evolutionists continue to build their supposedly scientific case.
Supposedly.
Virtually rules out everything that follows after it.
Evolution teaches that energy, such as lightning or heat, plus matter, can occasionally create new life.
Not like that. No.
Our entire food industry rests on the fact that this can never happen.
It doesn't rest on that fact, no.
If we examine a jar of peanut butter, it contains matter and is exposed to light
matter's
and
good.
Heat. But we never find new life inside unless an outside life contaminates it.
How long do they have to wait for that mold to appear?
If the theory of evolution was viable, then I should, occasionally, by subjecting this to energy, end up having new life. Now, we go down to the store, and if I open this jar of peanut butter, maybe not often, but on some occasion...
On some occasion.
Their whole budget went into buying peanut butter.
And so...
Ooh, I wonder what's going to happen.
When we open the jar of peanut butter, we look in there, there's no new life.
What, do you have a microscope for eyes, you idiot?
Now, you may smile at this, but hopefully you'll never forget it, because you and I conduct, collectively, over 1 billion experiments every year, and we've done that for virtually 100 years.
Peanut butter experiments?
We never encounter new life. In fact, the entire food industry of the world depends on the fact that evolution doesn't happen.
Okay. There is just...
There's so many wrong things with that. Let's just start from the beginning.
Well, the beginning is this. Let's go back to...
Their use of the word fairy tale?
Well, not even that. Let's go back to when I was 14 in high school in biology and ecology class. I was not a good student. I slept I had my biology class and my ecology class.
Did you have ADD?
I have ADD. But in the morning, it was in the morning, and I slept through it. And even then, I still know enough about these topics to be able to blow this argument out of the water. It is perhaps the most ridiculous. And again, it's like the Evolution Museum. In the last episode, we talked about this, and I didn't understand why they would ever push something so ridiculous as creationism.
What you're wondering is why they would put it out there when it's so easy for people to debunk, right? That's your basic question?
Exactly.
Well, the reason is because they don't care that people debunk. You see, it's one of the principles, something called cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is essentially this. Let's pretend you have developed a worldview or just a belief about something. Cognitive dissonance will essentially force you to forget about every single piece of evidence that contradicts it. Meanwhile, it'll reinforce itself anytime there's any evidence that sort of points in the direction. It's kind of like those, like a cult, right? Those Heaven Gate cult. Well, the ones that, you know, like perhaps not that one because they all die, but cults like that, they're doomsday cults, and then doomsday doesn't happen, you would expect these guys to be like, oh, well, I guess this is wrong. But what they do is they switch it over, and then suddenly they're like, well, at the last minute, you know, Reverend Moon saved the universe.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I have my own cognitive dissonance going on for years and years. I'd look at the clock all the time, and I'd be like, oh my God, the clock says 911. And I'd be like, it's always happening. And then,
ooh, you predicted 9/11, buddy.
But it was, you know, I look at the clock, you know, about 100 times a day. Maybe once a week, it would be 9/11. And,
Well, that's actually not cognitive dissonance. That's actually something called the file drawer effect. And that's essentially where you disregard the misses and you only focus on the hits. Mm. I mean, it's kind of like what psychics use, right? They'll throw 100,000 things at you, and you always remember that thing where all of a sudden you're like freaked out, like when you look at the clock and it's like 11:11 or 9:9. Well, not 9:99, but
yeah.
9:09.
If it was 9:99, it would be bad news.
That would probably be the end of the year. That's like, Reverend Moon, where are you when we need you?
Yeah, the clock would be melting off the wall impressionist style, and it'd just be bad news.
All right, well, okay, so
back to peanut butter.
Wow, you do have ADD. All right, back to the peanut butter thing. Like, I actually kind of like enjoy how the first part they have one of the big names in creationism, which is I forget what his last name is, Dwayne Gish. Dwayne Gish, you know that old dinosaur at the beginning of the video
that talks about.
Anyways, he's a huge guy at the creation science, like institute or whatever they're called. He's basically the one that believes that the Grand Canyon is proof positive that the Great Flood happened, because he thinks that, you know, tons of water actually caused the Grand Canyon, you know, solid granite to just evaporate. Anyways, but they have Dwayne Gish at the beginning, and he's like saying, the thought that God wasn't involved is a fairy tale, and you just gotta be like, that's the pot calling the kettle airplane. It doesn't even make any sense. Yeah. I'm like, you know what? I think that, you know, believing that every animal fit on a boat, I think that is a definition of a fairy tale.
But that's the thing. I mean, it goes back to the whole cognitive dissonance idea of say, creationism and Noah's Ark, and now this ridiculous peanut butter. Okay, let's look at this. He's saying that we conduct a billion, he's basically saying we open up a billion jars of peanut butter a year for 100 years. Now, let's just say let's just pretend and say that those statistics would actually be.
I think I'd buy peanut butter stocks. A billion jars.
So, well, let's say that those stats are accurate, just for argument's sake, and let's just pretend and say that on a statistical level, it makes sense that over 100 years, with a billion jars of peanut butter a year, that life did spontaneously exist inside the peanut butter. The thing about it is when you're talking about evolution, aren't we talking about it takes a really long time for even a single cell molecule to appear that no one would even be able to detect in a jar of peanut butter?
Well, here's the interesting thing, actually. They conducted a lot of experiments in, I think it was the 70s, where this one pioneering physicist essentially put all of the matter that he would expect to find on primordial Earth, and kind of shot a bunch of high, you know, voltage energy. But we're talking really high, people. We're talking like, you know, thousands and thousands of
mega,
crazy volts,
tetra watts.
And what they noticed was that there were organic molecules were beginning to be constructed. They were really crude, but that's what kind of like led them to believe that perhaps life evolved that way, because, you know, these I think it was fat and protein. Anyways, they started creating membranes and organizing. Now, they're not alive. Technically, they're still not alive, because, you know, they don't self-replicate. But they were able to kind of form into this interesting substance. Later, of course, there was a lot of controversy, because then some people said, no, the conditions that he used weren't really the conditions of primordial Earth. So, I mean, there's still a lot of debate, because we just aren't sure what the conditions were. And that's what makes creating those kinds of experiments really kind of difficult. But one of the main reasons, going back to sort of like whole, you know, evolution happening over long periods of times, when Darwin first introduced the theory of evolution through natural selection, because he's not the pioneer of evolution, he's pioneer of evolution through natural selection. Evolution's been around for a while. But when he proposed it, everyone refuted it, not because of necessarily theological reasons, but because they were like, well, the Earth can't be old enough for that to happen, because you have to remember, at the time, The best estimate was by a name by the a guy by the name of Lord Kelvin, and he was the most respected scientist at the time, and his estimate was something like 12 million years or something really, really small. So Lord Kelvin, who was a serious scientist, said, Darwin, you know, it's just not enough time for your process to happen. So once we realize that the Earth is actually about 4.5 billion years, then we realize, okay, throw in 100 million years and yeah, things can kind of like develop. So I just don't even know.
And lengths of time like that and situations like that basically immediately debunk the whole billion cans of
in 100 years. That's like that's not even a heartbeat in geological time. 100 years is a fart. It is a fart in the time of the universe. And not just that, but here's
God's fart.
I wonder how that smells. It smells like exploding mountain. No, but the funny
it smells divine.
Ooh, it heals the sick. But the funny thing, when you boil it down too, I mean, he's talking about he opens the jar in the video, and I guess he expects, I don't know, an ant to pop out. He's not even examining with a microscope. We expect to see new life. What do you see? A fish will come out of here?
Let's see what we... Oh,
nothing. I'm sure that's not a one-sided... I'm sure that's a really well-conducted experiment, mister.
Well, I just like how the opening of the video... Basically, it went into it. It's basically that woman is like... what was it? Life on Earth outside of the means of God is nothing but a fairy tale. It's a fairy tale.
They have to repeat quite a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't get it. We don't really understand that it's a fairy tale. Thank you so much, Chucky.
I mean, it goes back to the idea that basically what they're doing is they're oversimplifying things
Well, they're infantilizing people. If you boil it down to such simple concepts and you're like, well, therefore, you know, peanut butter doesn't create new life, therefore evolution doesn't exist.
And man isn't a monkey. I mean, you man aren't monkeys.
Why are there monkeys if we're monkeys? Wow. Nice. Nicely done.
Yeah.
On interesting side note, Chuck Meisler, I think that's how you pronounce it. Anyways, that's the guy that you heard in the video opening the peanut butter jar. Very serious scientist. He was essentially a failed businessman who was really kind of big on the whole Bible thing, and that's pretty much how he's making a living right now. So you have to kind of wonder, what's his motivation? Is his motivation to try to tell people, you know, fact, or to support his crazy myths in order for him to line his pockets? I don't want to say that's his only reason, but you know, when you don't make money, who's trying to make money in the aerospace industry and all that kind of stuff, if you don't make money in that and you're a failed businessman, hey, how about the oldest business in the world?
No, but I mean, if you could make money
proselytizing.
Yeah, you're I mean...
good effort though, buddy. A for effort, yay.
You know, I saw it in my head and I was like, I'm going to go for it. But I mean,
were you trying to showboat me?
I was trying to a little bit. I mean, you were winning on the big word thing, and you know,
buddy, I'll always win on the big word thing.
It's true. But I mean, if you're able to go out there and you're able to make money pushing your agenda, I mean, you know, keep this on the down low here. But if this whole atheist angle can make us some bling,
shh, buddy. There's 30 people listening.
but yeah, I mean, I'm not going to attack the guy because
it's a dream job, I suppose.
Yeah,
if he likes what he does.
I mean, you got to imagine that. You got to understand that, as we were saying before, there's a lot of people with a lot of money pushing this, and this goes kind of into the new thing is that atheists really have to think about forming groups and forming communities past what they're doing right now, in order to counteract the disinformation and basically the war on reason.
It's a sophisticated, like I said last show, these are guys that have sophisticated methods, which leads to a segue. You know, we're getting good at these segue things. You know that I'm thinking about it? Segue.
Come with me on a voyage from one topic to another.
We will travel magically. No, this leads us to the second point, which was my article, Is Atheism a Religion? And first of all, there's quite a bit of a story, but I'm gonna try to boil it down as quickly as possible. Created a big buzz on actually Shoutwire.
On the internet in general, you got a couple thousand people.
I did get a couple thousand people, which is pretty surprising. Yeah, you know, like it was just, I was inundated, I was flooded. I was flooded by so many comments. I literally, when I took all the words and I put it into Microsoft Word, it added up to about 15 pages of solid writing from everybody. And there was a lot of different opinions. There were people saying, no, you know, atheism is the lack of a belief in God. It's not a religion. And the thing that I think most people didn't really realize when they... I don't think most people actually read the article, I'll be honest with you.
Which is a sad thing to say when you're supposed to be atheism and skepticism have always been tied together, right? And skeptics are supposed to be people who aren't trying to debunk everything, but they should be keeping an open mind and they should be looking for proof on things. So, I mean, to say out of hand, is atheism a religion without reading the article and then just going... No.
Well, here's the funny thing. Like, number one, there was an article about this one prisoner who they found they were violating his religious beliefs because he was an atheist, and I think they were trying to get him to attend mass or something like that, and he says, I don't have religious beliefs.
Because
that's one of those tricky things, because all of a sudden now we do have to call it a religion in order for him to have his religious rights.
Well, it's because it's part of if you attend chapel and stuff like that, the chaplain can recommend you for parole and everything else like that. And he was saying, this is unfair to me because I'm an atheist, and why is it that these serial killers who are devout Catholics who repent and this and that are getting
good words from people of authority, really.
Yeah.
Parole boards, you know, probably these parole board guys are religious themselves, and I wouldn't doubt that they hold prejudicial views of people that are atheists. Luckily, only 0.2% of the prison populations are atheists, which is lower than the actual per capita atheist rate, but I'm not going to sort of make a corollary here.
That's a whole other podcast.
That's a whole other podcast.
ADD. We're going off topic.
We're not going that much off topic. Basically, the point is this: that my argument in the article itself was saying, well, no, atheism is not a religion in the sense that automatically it doesn't deal with the three classic roles that religion plays. Number one, in trying to explain, you know, the processes of nature in a very simplistic and sort of myth-driven way. Number two, to provide codified laws for structure, and let's not kid ourselves. I mean, religion was really one of the more stable and one of the first ones to do this, but those first two were eventually kind of weeded out in modern society, at least now, so that it fulfills now the third role, which is providing spiritual guidance for individuals, because regardless of whether or not you are an atheist or you're religious, odds are you may at some point experience something that can be probably labeled as spiritual. Not in a way that's saying that there inherently is a God, but spirituality is a metaphor for a lot of our feelings of, you know, awe at being alive, or fear or dread or loss from loved ones. I mean, these are powerful emotions, and sometimes they overwhelm us and they cause us to have these kinds of experiences, and that's what I call a spiritual experience. And religion is really quite good at providing direction and, you know, answers for some of these very confusing spiritual questions. And my lamentation was saying, I think that an atheist secular movement should attempt to do the same thing, but in a way that doesn't necessarily involve dogma, that doesn't involve these authoritarian structures, just a way for people that don't necessarily believe in a higher power to still get together, to still have all of those great elements that religion has without any of the bad stuff. But people didn't want to listen to that part of the article. They focus on the fact that,
it was a hot topic title, it was designed to do. But at the same time, they didn't.
It kind of bit me in the ass. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I knew going in that it was going to be a hard sell, and maybe I wasn't tight enough when I wrote the article. I mean, it was like 2,500 words, and that's a lot of to ask for a lot of people, I suppose, to read an entire article. But come on. I mean, we're supposed to be educated. We're supposed to, you know, at least read an entire thing before you comment on it. Please, people. Not that I'm pointing any fingers, but it just seems
as
almost...
all of you who listen to this podcast.
You're bad.
Go back and read it, goddamn it. But I don't know. To me, the issue with atheism is that there doesn't seem to be much of a community with it, and because there's a lack of community, atheists are afraid to kind of stand up and say, I am atheist and I am proud to be atheist. And you see this a lot in the States where people are relatively afraid to let people know that that's how they feel, because basically you've got organized religion and you've got atheists who are at this point standing alone, and there's a couple of organizations and so forth, but at the moment those organizations are waging a very aggressive, angry, and somewhat obnoxious war on religion, which only makes it worse for moderate atheists like myself to actually stand up and say, you know what, I'm an atheist as well.
Well, I wanted to create an organization like that from the very get-go. That was my first plan before trying to write the book and starting the website. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were like, that I approached that were atheists, were like, no, I don't see what the point is. I'm not religious and I avoid these kinds of institutions precisely because I don't think I need to go talk to people about the fact that I'm atheist. But you know what? In a sense, I like talking about it. And even those same people, they talk about it too. And they don't necessarily talk about it in a way to, you know, testify to someone else, but they talk about it because even though you might not believe in a God, you are surrounded by people that do. And that can be a frightening prospect. And if you think that you should remain insular, that you should remain, you know, completely and utterly independent because that is why you are an atheist, you are what I call a rebel without religion. You are essentially non-religious because you have rejected religion, probably because you were burned. I am an atheist because I have made a really deep, conscious effort to understand all of the facts. And I didn't jump into this saying, oh, you know, religious people are bad, they do evil things, which is untrue of a lot of religious people, I would say the vast majority of them. And I don't reject it because simply I'm so mad at religion. And I think that's the shame. That is the shame with most of the atheists that I have talked to. They are mad at religion. They are, you know, some of them are frightened by a lot of religious fundamentalism, and it's understandable.
Religious fundamentalism at the moment is a terrifying thing. You've got, what would you say? You'd say the right-wing American religious fundamentalism, which is very scary, and of course you've got the Islamic militant fundamentalism, which is, of course, pretty scary as well.
Well, all of these are very organized. All of these are powerful political groups. I mean, look at Palestine. I mean, the reason that Hamas won the election is because they are a powerful political group. They can exercise that power. And not that I say that atheists should exercise the power in the same way, but we definitely need to be much more organized into protecting our, you know, sort of like secular rights, because I have news for you. People want to take those away. And if you really think that you can sit in your living room and just watch your HDTV and not worry about any of this stuff,
and everything is good because they fired the guy on Grey's Anatomy who said faggot, that's not good. Like, next thing you know, like 5 years from now, you're going to realize,
you're going to realize that you are not being represented by people that share your particular values and the values of democracy. I believe that democracy must inherently always separate religion and politics, and we are noticing an intertwining of these two things. It is undeniable, and I think that it is this complacency as atheists that we suddenly assume that we don't need to worry about this. This is a mistake, people. This is a huge mistake.
Well, I think one of the reasons that atheism as a topic and is so popular nowadays, I mean, it's the reason this podcast exists, it's the reason there's lots of books that are being published right now, is because people are seeing the trend of where it's going. And it reminds me, I've been reading a lot of books about World War II, and they were talking, they had diaries of a lot of people leading up to it, and a lot of people were talking about they could see it coming over the course of the years. They saw what was happening, and it basically, at one point, people were saying, this is the tipping point. If something doesn't change right now, then basically there's no turning back, and we're just going to be in this. And this is what I worry about, is that we are very fastly approaching the tipping point. Once the tipping point has been met, there won't be any turning back, and
there's just going to be no middle ground. That's going to be the problem. There is going to be a division, because essentially the people that are drawing the line are the fundamentalists, and on the other side, the opposite side, I won't deny this, are the really hardcore atheists that are declaring that religion itself is evil and wrong, and they are drawing the lines.
Who wrote God Is Not Great again?
Christopher Hitchens. Christopher Hitchens wrote God Is Not Great. I read the book. Actually, I've read probably every single atheist book. if they're your competition, you have to read them. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed his book. I won't deny it.
I enjoy watching him on television, but on like a you know, watching America's Funniest Home Videos kind of thing, or what's that, you know, prank phone call show with the Jerky Boys, whatever. It's the same kind of thing. I like watching it because it's crank shocking. Actors. Yeah, it's shocking and it makes me laugh, but at the same time, it makes me cringe because this is the face. There's a reason that they had him on Fox News, and it wasn't because they were pushing his agenda. It was because they knew
that he was the complete polar opposite, and they could really anger people and drive them away from.
From atheism as a concept, and like moderates, and you see it all the time. People who like don't believe in God, but they don't want to make a big deal out of it because they don't want to be perceived as jackasses.
Well, you know, Daniel Dennett said it pretty poignantly. As he said that a lot of people don't actually believe; they believe in belief. They go through the motions because, you know, they say this is a good institution, it provides a lot of value to the community. And this is, on a side note, this is what I was trying to mention in the article that. You know, you take a look at African Americans in the States, the only institutions that have never let them down are the religious ones. And as much as you want to bash them, the civil rights movements, which Christopher Hitchens denies was religious in nature, unfortunately for him, he is in the wrong about that. You know, Martin Luther King Jr. was, you know, a very religious man, and he believed that his duty was, you know, came directly from God. He believed that he was essentially, you know, kind of like the modern day Black Moses. Mm-hmm. And in that way, he's not necessarily wrong.
And a lot of the grassroots resistance and grassroots organization came through the church.
Churches, exactly. And you know what? You're not going to go to the South to, you know, a Black community and say, hey, let go of your God. This is a foolish thing to believe in, and it's completely useless, and you can go on without them. No, they can't. They really can't, because the support network is so strong, and the community there is so strong. And you know what? You go there, and you get a lot of joy and happiness from them. Michael Shermer, who wrote a bunch of books, The Science of Good and Evil, How We Believe, Why We Believe Weird Things. He's a phenomenal author. And he did a trip. He went over to the South and he went to all these churches, and he quote-unquote testified about how really pleasant of an experience it was, and how he enjoyed himself there. I mean, there was singing, there was, you know, just joy in the room. And I think it's funny that a lot of really cynical atheists are like, oh, people don't need this, this is silly. You know what? This is part of the human experience. This is, you know, sort of like meeting up, being in a community, making songs, dancing, laughing together, talking about it, our lives. This is the human experience. And religion has been so good at taking those elements and giving it to people because that's what they want. And yet atheists are like, we don't want this. This is, we don't need this at all. I mean, I got to tell you, it's sad. It's sad that we feel that way.
Well, not you and I. we are the enlightened ones.
Yeah, but I've had to convert you, buddy. You, for a long time, you were like, no, this idea is silly.
I would say that you and I have been a give and take. You changed a lot over the period of time that we had our conversations, from something a bit more hard line.
Sure, yeah, I was definitely hard line. I'll give you credit for that. You helped sort of
my big heart. My big heart softened you. I cooled your fiery heart with a cool tropical
breeze, man.
Yes, exactly.
Well, here's the funny thing. In my attempt to get you to, I don't want to say convert, but to get you to accept this idea, I myself had to change, because I realized that if you didn't accept these ideas, and I know how you feel about religion and all this other kind of stuff, then it would be impossible for me to convince anyone else. And that was essentially my conversion itself happened through sort of like this, well, Jacob, you can't say this, and no, I think that you're wrong about this, and you need to take the middle ground. And so I've gone for the middle ground. And I think, you know, as my site indicates and as the book will eventually indicate, that's the direction I'm going through. And I know that a lot of people refute me on this, but I believe that atheism is itself a movement, and I would like to throw in my hat into that movement and say, like, let's get organized, people, because we are not winning the essential culture wars that are happening through religion.
And on that note,
let's segue.
Let's talk about penises.
Yes, I think that at any point in the podcast, we must always talk about penises.
Mm-hmm. Specifically, circumcised and uncircumcised penises.
Right.
Now, we won't go into this too deeply because we don't have a lot of time left, but
we can go a little long. We have that option.
That's true. That's true. There's no show barking up against us that's like, get off the air.
Yeah, that's the beauty thing. That's the beauty of being on the internet. There's
we'll
no like,
talk as long as we want.
We will make this a 14-hour podcast.
I've heard them, man. I've heard the 2-hour podcast. They're painful.
Oh, God. They really are painful. No, what we're going to talk about, there is this Oregon Supreme Court that essentially upheld a decision by...
Well, it didn't upheld a decision. It's looking into an appeal.
The lower court.
Let me just sum this up. I'll sum this up. You got a family, husband, wife, and a kid. Divorced, the parents divorce. The husband gets custody of the kid. Husband converts to Judaism. And now he says the kid has converted to Judaism, and now he wants the kid to get a circumcision. Now the mother is saying the kid doesn't actually want the circumcision. He just doesn't have the. He's too afraid of not so much afraid of his father, but he's.
Well, he looks up to him. Probably.
Yeah, exactly. It isn't willing to go against his father's wishes and put his foot down and say no. So, on a surface level, it seems like something of a clear-cut case. The dad has custody. The boy says he wants to.
And he's 12. I mean, not that he's an adult, but he's not 3 years old.
But my main issue with this story, and this is something that I really wish they delved a little bit more into, is the idea of why the mother is putting up such a fight. This is obviously not an inexpensive trial. This is not an inexpensive thing to go through to get all the way up to the Oregon Supreme Court. So she must have some pretty severe opinions on the subject, and I just don't understand why she would object if it was something that the boy actually wanted.
I think there are two reasons. Reason number one is that if she is not a Jew herself, that she could see the circumcision as part of this trend for her losing connection with her son that would have a different religion now and would be part of a different cultural tradition.
Mm-hmm.
That could be the reason. Reason number two is the fact that the boy is impressionable, that he does not have a sophisticated understanding of the religion or even the health implications of circumcision, and that really the decision is more to please the father, and he may regret that. I mean, there's been a number of men that are circumcised that have been trying to get back their foreskin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something you can easily get back. I think... Firstly, I mean, you know my position on circumcision. I don't like it. I think that it's essentially useless. I know that it's a huge button. It's a big topic, essentially also in Africa, because they're trying to make circumcision mandatory because of AIDS. And I also have huge problems with that based on that, but we'll go into that in another podcast. But essentially, like, circumcision is coming back into fashion. And in the United States, even though... Jews make up probably only about 2% of the population. 50% of young men are circumcised in the States.
Hmm.
And one of the big reasons that people think it is because this is a medical procedure that hospitals tag on in order to be able to claim higher fees for...
Really?
Yeah. It's an expensive treatment. I disagree with it fundamentally because babies are not anesthetized. They are also sort of like hypersensitive to pain. A lot of times they go into shock when their foreskin is cut. It looks like they're sleeping, but they're really literally in shock. There are a number of other problems. It can lead to infection. When moils do it, they actually have to suck the blood when the foreskin, which leads to a lot of infection. Sometimes the penis has to be amputated. That has happened on multiple occasions. I mean, I'm just thinking, like, don't fucking mess with that. You know, just don't mess with that area. Why do you have to mess with it? It just doesn't seem like it's necessary.
Well, you know, the big part about circumcision is to take away from the physical enjoyment of sex.
That's definitely at least the female version of it. But yeah. Originally, the whole circumcision was because you had to kind of make a flesh offering to God. That's the, like in the Jewish religion, that's what that is. You're making that offering.
I'd say take my pinky.
At least the tip of it. Pinky before you take the foreskin.
I don't know. It's very tricky stuff. I'd really have to, like you were saying about the thing in Africa with AIDS and everything like that, I'd really have to see some information about the studies that they do in order to make judgment, because I got a feeling if you took a closer look at it, you'd find that there are some interesting groups behind the studies.
You know what? No, I could actually believe it for just one reason, and the reason is because when you are uncircumcised and you have sex, there are micro tears that happen in the foreskin, and those micro tears make you more susceptible to contamination, the AIDS virus. So I could believe it in that sense, but there's this weird problem when you create this. I don't want to say incentive. But essentially, now you are almost mandating unprotected sex, because people who are circumcised will suddenly feel, oh, well, I'm circumcised, I'm not going to get AIDS, when the difference might be like 5%. It's very low percentage. It's not really that significant. But you have to remember that in medicine, anytime like their margins of error are very, very different from all the other types of margins of error. Like in science, it's like margins of error 0.00005, like something ridiculous like that. But in science, it's different. It's very, large margins of error.
Mm-hmm.
So, that might be part of the problem of studies like that.
Mm-hmm.
But in any sense, I just feel as though, I mean, I'm not going to stop people from circumcising, but the supposed health benefits and those kinds of things.
How old do you have to be to get piercings or tattoos?
Piercings? I don't think there's literally an age limit.
With your parents' permission, you can get it or whatever else like that.
I don't know what it is for tattoo. Actually, yeah. I don't. Maybe it must be something like 16 or something.
Yeah. Well, it's probably something along the lines of you can't get it until you're 16, and then under 18 is without your parents' consent. You would imagine that they'd have something in place like this for an operation like this.
Reverse? You can't do it when you're 12, but it's fine when you're to do it when you're like 3 months old.
Well, it's kind of the idea of saying, okay, this 12-year-old girl wants breast implants, and the dad says it's okay. The kid is still developing. But this is the thing. The kid is still developing. You're talking about messing with his genitalia during a period of time where he's going 12, I guess,
he's probably hitting puberty soon.
Well, he's either through or it's not done. Basically, development goes between the ages of sexual development is between the ages of like 8 and 16. And to me, it's ridiculous that that anybody would be willing to mess with that between those years. It's basically if you're going to be converted to Judaism and you want to get circumcised, then that's fine, but you should probably wait until everything is developed properly to avoid complications.
Look, no, it doesn't... You're not forced to do it. I mean, nowhere does it say you have to do it. It's just a sign of piety.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. I mean, like, why does he have to
well,
to,
I'm pretty
to do
sure,
that?
I'm pretty sure that that this guy's got, like, a rabbi that's saying, yes, it is required. I mean, if you're converting, converting to Judaism is not like
it helps
converting
to a doctor too, who's going to perform the operation.
But it's not a small thing. I mean, other religions are pretty open door, but to be converting to Judaism is a big deal.
Well,
they're going to be like, you want in? Chop it off.
Well, that's the thing about Judaism. I mean, unlike most of the world's religion, who are proselytizing religions that go out and try to convert people, Judaism takes the opposite stance. They're like, it's an exclusive club. If you want in, you have to be serious about it. You have to, like Judaism, for its credit, is a very studious religion. I mean, you have to study the Talmud. You have to really be into it. When you do your, bar mitzvah and stuff like that, you have to quote passages from it, and you have to select the ones that you find are meaningful. There is a whole big ceremony involving that, and it's very studious.
Is it possible to fail your bar mitzvah?
I don't know, actually. Be like, you didn't quote the Talmud, you quoted Lord of the Rings.
The bar mitzvah is off, you have failed.
You have failed miserably.
Everybody come back next year.
Well, that's the interesting thing also about Judaism, is the fact that it is a very intellectual religion, but at the same time, it's very exclusive. So they're not like, hey, everybody's welcome and come on in. No, they're more like, you know what, if you want to be a part of it, you really have to work at it. And even then, I mean, there's still a lot of these segments, the Orthodox segments, that are like, oh, you can't convert, you have to be born one.
I gotta say, if there's one cover charge that makes sure that only the hardcore get it, it would be cutting off the circumcision. It would definitely be circumcision.
All right, with that, we're gonna play the closing song.